show.
Is that the show with the live bands?
Yeah, it sounds like there's talking between the band and the guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Interview with bands while they're still alive.
I'll check it out.
Live from Thunderbird Radio Hell on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. That is, of course, the National Campus Community Radio Association networks throughout the province of British Columbia and throughout Canada. We, of course, joined by both two radio stations that we normally do on our flagship stations. Both one of them's on Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM and, of course, our full hour show on CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you for joining us. And again, my name's Kelly. I've got Michael Rubin on the line. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Kelly.
Hello, and or good afternoon, wherever you're listening to us.
Because hopefully we're actually being heard around the world.
Yeah, online.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
I know there's... I've talked to a few people in the U.S. that well, they're friends of mine, so they actually listen to the show. So, yeah.
That's good.
Which is really cool. And Right. Hopefully those who are listening in other parts of the world are sharing with their friends. So, which is...
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've been talking to the Mayor Gregor Robinson's assistant about having him come on the show.
Right.
They've made a few statements about what's going on with TransLink and like the Evergreen Line and things like that, on the TransLink website.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the mayor's council section.
Yeah.
And so that's the only statement that they want to make at this time about transit and TransLink. And I've been trying to get them to talk to us more about low-income housing because...
And the social housing, am I right?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. But they haven't even responded to anything about that at all. So, I don't know what's going on with that one way or the other. So, I was hoping that maybe we could have him on as a guest and we do our normal 1 hour, interview with him, but we're at a bit of a standstill. So,
I mean, there are some bit of standstills I was hoping to get one of our Autism Live hosts to become part of the show as well. So we're in the stages of, you know, what we want to do for our show.
Yeah. So November 17th, just so people know this, November 17th, we will have Kira Lynn, and she's the author of a book about chronic pain and chronic pain awareness. She's also a life coach and things like that for people that have chronic pain via chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, arthritis, whichever way you want to go with chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to appear on November 17th with us. She may actually come into the studio, so that would be really cool, right? Because she lives local in Vancouver. So, yeah.
Cool.
Our last couple of guests were, well, of course, Sheldon Reynolds. He lives in California, speaking about Parkinson's. And last week's author was Laura Lane. She lives in Toronto.
Yes.
Near Toronto, although I'm not really too sure. I think she said Hamilton. I'm not sure how close Hamilton is to Toronto, but it's kind of nearby there, right?
Yeah, well, if you want to listen to our podcast that we did on our show, you can check under NCRA Program Radio Program Exchange and click under Community Living Show and follow the links on that.
Yeah. So follow along with us. You know,
yeah.
We're trying to get more and more interesting people on with bigger and bigger messages, right?
Mm.
So, and you mentioned there was an MLA that you mentioned that we're trying to get on too, wasn't there?
It was about social housing.
Yeah.
And what was I was hoping to bring in David Eby to the show and talk about the, you know, you mentioned social housing, so I'm bringing that up as well, because it's not just a Vancouver-based issue, it's a provincial issue as well.
Yeah, it really is a provincial issue. It just happens to be that, well, the Lower Mainland holds most of the population of the most condensed population of British Columbia,
right,
is the Lower Mainland. Yeah, mm.
But mostly a lot of people live in the Lower Mainland issues. But you got other places like Greater Victoria on the island in Nanaimo, and Prince George and Prince Rupert, Kelowna, Kamloops, any of those areas too.
Yeah, I know. The native bands in West Kelowna, when I was out there walking across BC, I spoke to them about social housing, and they say, yeah, it is a problem because it's got to be affordable for everyone, right?
Right.
You know, everybody needs a home.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
If you check under facebook.com/groups/ C Living Radio, which is our Facebook page, Community Living Radio Show, I posted the Autism Speak Canada Walk in Courtney, and I posted the three strategies, and it's a quote, three strategies I want to share growing up on autism spectrum. You can check out autismspeaks.org on that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you want to check out on Facebook, of course, we got about 233 members. We just got three new members as well, so included. So thank you very much.
Yeah, one of those new member requests actually came from a guest who we'll have on November 17th, Kira Lynn. So yeah,
okay,
yeah,
thanks.
So, which is one of the cool parts about us having the show, and sometimes we just meet guests just by walking through the mall.
True.
You know, it's like, oh wow, this. They're out there. They're making an interesting statement about something. you know. So, that's kind of how I've met a couple of guests, book signings.
Mm.
They were actually at a table in front of Chapters and Kohl's signing books, and it's like, hey, that's a pretty cool message that you have.
Is it Chapters or is it Indigo? And I know Chapters have changed their name.
I'm not sure. Aren't they all the same company?
I know that it's pretty much the same company. All I know is that the one on Broadway and Granville had changed their names from Chapters to Indigo.
I'm not sure. I had to double check this. I think the Chapters in the Willowbrook Mall in Langley is actually Kohl's, not Chapters.
Kohl's. Okay. So then they're also another link to the chain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually just Google searched that one, and yeah, it is actually cold. But then there's a couple others in South Surrey that are. I've seen one that says Chapters, and then I've seen one that says either Chapters or Kohl's or Indigo. Yeah. So, but anyway. But I was surprised to see they're doing a lot of small authors, and not really to get too much of a pitch to Chapters, Indigos, or Kohl's, but they've been doing a lot of smaller authors having book signings because they're local authors.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Right.
So, yeah.
You can also check out not only our email, not our email. Well, we do have an email, communitylivingradio@gmail.com, but I just found some, and you can also check out other disabilities as well. There's another closed group called Disabled People Against Cuts, and it's pronounced DPAC, and they share a lot of good stories about disability people on mm-hmm. against cuts. So you want to check that out as well on Facebook.
Yeah. There's a number of really good groups, support groups and things like that. If you go through Facebook, to find them,
right?
Speaking of groups like that, because the Fibromyalgia Wellspring, they have a support group on their Facebook page, I believe, also. But they are working towards, you talk about social housing, they're working towards a project that would house youth at risk,
right,
along with people who would be pretty much so homeless due to other disabilities.
Okay.
So, and they're actually working with the Mayor Schaefer in the city of Langley, and I can never end. One of the council members is Rudy Stronenblum, and I'm sorry, Rudy, if I mispronounce your name, but it's elongated and kind of reads weird.
Right.
I can kind of joke around about that because
we probably would have a number
of dinners and things like that with each other, and we know each other. Just if we ran into each other on the mall, we're like, "Hi, how we're doing?" And handshake, hugs, all that sort of stuff. So I can kind of joke with them about his name, but But they're all working together to build a project that will house children and youth and youth at risk and people with disabilities who might wind up homeless because it's like you have a choice. Okay, here's the thing. Sometimes people have a choice between buying their medication to help their disability
right.
or paying the rent. That should never be the choice.
No.
That shouldn't be. You know, there should be resources. So that's the reason why that the city of Langley, mainly the mayor and Cheryl Young with the Fibromyalgia Wellspring Foundation, they're working together to build what they're calling the Lodge.
The Lodge, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it's going to appear within the next 18 to 24 months.
Okay.
So, which is pretty quick when you think about it. I mean, in some cases not fast enough, but it's pretty quick.
Right.
And it'll have micro suites and some support businesses to help supply people with food, clothing, because they'll have a thrift store in there for secondhand clothing and things like that.
Okay. You know,
so it should be a pretty cool project, and it would be a pretty interesting thing to present to other cities in the Lower Mainland. You know, to see, hey, where else can we do this? How else can we do this?
Right? Yeah, of course.
Especially towards social housing.
Right.
So, yeah.
So. Interesting stuff, Michael.
Very interesting stuff. And, you know, it's pretty cool to getting people's messages out there about that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Just let listeners know that you're listening to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks, both the national, and it's on the National Campus and Community Radio Association, and we're also on two radio stations along with it, Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM, that's our half-hour show, and of course on the full hour CITR 101.9 FM. Anything else you want to mention?
Oh, well, that was good for now. Do we have maybe a clip to cut to, or no?
I could take a break, and I'll put you on hold, and I'll go through some of the ads, all right?
Okay.
All right, so we will take a break. We will be right back. If you like what you hear, email us, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. That's our email address. We will be back in a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Out there on the water, it's where I'll drift, wave the waves out there.
Touring in support of her critically acclaimed new album, Love and Lust, Jada Kelly's Canadian tour comes to Vancouver this November. Jada Kelly, along with co-headliners Sweet Alibi from Winnipeg, are performing live for the Rogue Folk Club at St. James Hall on Thursday, November 10th.
I know we've been through this before.
Jada Kelly and Sweet Alibi live at the Rogue Folk Club at St. James Hall. For more information and tickets, visit darthjada.com and sweetalibi.com.
At night, when I live by
fall. Hi, my name's Matthew. When I first got back from a military tour in Afghanistan, anytime I heard a siren or even a car alarm, I'd lose it completely. I would turn into a wild man, screaming, waving my arms. People would yell at me, "Shut up, you crazy. Get a job, would ya?" Well, I didn't go out and get a job. I got help instead. Now, I'm in a clean and safe apartment. I have friends and helpers who understand me. I landed a decent job, but I gotta admit, I still don't like car alarms or sirens. I used to think mental illness was a death sentence. I got life instead.
This message was produced by Columbian Center Society and Radio Malaspina in British Columbia.
Welcome to the Community Living Show. I'm, of course, Kelly. And, of course, thank you very much, Michael, for checking on what's happening on our show. All right, so I'm going to play you some episodes of Ask Dr. Doreen, part of the Autism Live. And, of course, you can check them, also check them out on Facebook, facebook.com/AutismLive. Or you can sign up the Autism Live's free newsletter at www.autism-live.com. Of course, Autism Live is a production of the Center of Autism and Related Disorders, known as CARD, headquartered in Woodland Hills, California, which offers throughout the United States and around the globe. And of course, for more information on therapy for autism and related disorders, visit CARD, which is the Center of Autism and Related Disorders, at Center for Autism, all in one word, CENTERFORAUTISM.com. All right, so we're going to do a clip on Ask Dr. Doreen. I know it's 54 minutes and 8 seconds, but we're not going to play it all through it because of our time, and hopefully we will get back to you in just a moment.
Good morning. We've missed you the last couple of weeks, but you needed to be away other places, and we always understand that when that happens.
Thank you very much. It was just last week, wasn't it? Or was it
the week before?
Sorry, we're just going to have to refresh that again. Here we go again.
Good morning. We've missed you the last couple of weeks, but you needed to be away other places, and we always understand that when that happens.
Thank you very much. It was just last week, wasn't it? Or was it
the week before? We had Ev Kung with us, okay. And that was really fun to have her.
That was in San Diego for the TRICARE meeting.
And as I said, sometimes we need you to be other places, and we all understand that and get that, but we love it when you're here.
Thank you very much.
Because you are such an expert in the field of autism, having worked in this field for more than 30 years. I've stopped apologizing for it because, you know, it's something to be very proud of. Mm-hmm. It's just that none of us quite believe it. You have great skin. Let's say that.
Thank you.
But in any case, you have been working in this field for well more than 30 years and have treated all kinds of individuals on the autism spectrum, from really little babies up through really senior citizens at this point. And we love your expertise. We love having an opportunity to talk to you. I like to say you have a beautiful mind.
Thank you very much. And
especially for this subject, and to take a little tour of it is a fabulous thing. We do like to remind everybody at the start of the show that there is no expert in this field who can give individual specific advice. But having said that, it's so wonderful to have a chance to talk with Dr. Grampuchet, because not only is she an expert, she's a visionary in this field. She gives us insight into what's happening, why it's happening, what information we need to make the next choice in our decision tree to get the best possible treatment for the people we care about or for ourselves.
Right.
So we appreciate that.
Thank you.
So much. I want to dive in with a question about a teenager. Mm-hmm. Dear Shannon and Dr. Doreen, my teen continues to struggle with comprehension. And this is a tale that we hear often, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Comprehension is a big, big deal. He goes to tutoring and I try to help him sometimes. He is resistant to learning. I think there is some inflexibility, which the tutor observed too. He may say he gets it and escapes, but he really doesn't. I fell off the deep end and maybe bad, threatened to take away a big reinforcer. That got his attention. we would go through the same material multiple times at a very slow pace and checking that he understood. The next day, the same question posed, he would not know the answer. I really don't know what to do, and it's hard for me to separate the emotions from his task avoidance behavior. He would resort to hard memorizing. He is practically failing the class and still resistant to help. They then went on to write further. I wrote about the question about the resistant teen to learning and comprehension. How can the process be more fun? I think that's, they said the processor more fun. I think, I don't know whether they're saying reinforcer or the process. I think it's the process be more fun. I tried, and the response is that I'm wasting time and he wants to get through the material ASAP. I don't know. Thank you again for your show. It's always helpful listening to other issues too. And most of all, thank you for caring and best wishes. This is a particularly tough thing because I think sometimes we get into a push me, pull you. And when it's this kind of a thing, I don't want to, and write in if I'm completely wrong about this, but sometimes I think we get afraid because what if it's, is it that they can't learn it or that they won't learn it? And do you react differently in those circumstances? Because if you try and try and try and they're still not getting it, I think sometimes we get afraid of, like, am I pushing them to do something? But what's the alternative if we don't learn comprehension? Do we let them fail?
Right. No, not at all. We don't. And you touched on a very important subject, Shannon, which is all this, the emotions of the mom.
Yes.
Right? And so let's start with separating those two, because the question really is about teaching the child to comprehend. And then there's the emotions of the mom. And both are very important. So we can talk about both issues because okay. they do interplay here. This is actually a really good example of how ABA works on us as well as people. Because really what's happening here and what you point out as well is that the we're talking about mom's behavior. We're saying mom had a meltdown, okay?
Yeah.
So mom has a meltdown. What are the antecedents and consequences to that? The antecedent could be that fear that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We're afraid, I'm afraid that this is an indication that he doesn't get it. He's never going to get it. He's not smart. He's never going to make it. All that becomes the antecedent to the meltdown. And the consequence which maintains that meltdown is actually that the child is not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting it. Every time he doesn't get it, that triggers again that fear and that all that thing. So it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy,
yeah.
right? But that's a very separate behavioral problem, right? And so we're going to deal with that separately. And
okay.
the way to deal with that separately, first of all, is separate yourself. Realize that what he's going through right now has nothing to do with you, okay? You are a mom, that's correct, and your job is to help and so on and so forth, but separate your own emotions from this. This is not about your failure or whatever else. It's not about your anxiety or whatever else. Your anxiety is very real, and it exists, and it needs to be dealt with, but not by him succeeding or failing, okay? So your anxiety is your anxiety. It's your emotion about what will happen in life if he fails.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you can conquer that regardless of how he does. Like, overcome that, think about that. It's a very separate thing. We don't want to put that pressure on him because now the pressure on him is, I better not let mom down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a whole different dialogue. Now, the thing about him is, I don't think this is a big issue to begin with. We never want to let our kids fail.
Okay.
But what we have to do is we have to step back, maybe make the task easier and model it more and teach him all the things that he requires in order to comprehend. So my first reaction to this is, why is he not comprehending? It could very well be that his memorization skills are very strong. So I have kids where they would rather memorize things than learn the formula
mm-hmm.
because memorizing is so easy, right?
Okay.
For them. Some kids have incredible memory, so they just fall back on memory, right? Visual memory, auditory memory, they just record and they never really get the formula behind the answer, so they can't reason it. But in this case, I don't know. You would really need to analyze all the prerequisite skills are there. Like when I have a child who's stuck, It never even occurs to me, not for a minute, and it shouldn't for you. If your child is at the level of comprehension, I mean, that's a high level skill. So we're talking, you should never think, oh, he's just not smart enough to get it. That's never the case. The case is always, I probably left out some prerequisite skill at some point that's integral, that's really crucial to this skill. So I should probably go back and check and make sure he knows the more basic things. And then see if I've missed something, I should teach that. If I have taught everything, then I just need to model more. So it's about going back and saying, you know, for comprehension, it could be the length of the sentence, or I don't know what it is that we're working on here. Sounds like it's from a book. So it could be reading comprehension or listening comprehension. Those are different. Reading comprehension makes it easier as long as he's a visual learner. What I would do is I would jump back and see if he can comprehend single sentences. Great, check. If he can comprehend two sentences, check. If he can answer all the WH questions, because that's how you're measuring his comprehension, is by being able to ask what happened, where did he go, who did whatever. Maybe he's getting those confused. I would teach him how to summarize. I would teach him how to take notes on the side. I would teach him who the key people are, first to circle all the key people, the key actions, those types of things.
We're going to come right back in just a moment here. We're going to do station ID. Thank you very much for people that are listening to us in the half hour show. And of course, do stay tuned for other shows that are coming up. And again, we are on the email, CITR late night, or not CITR, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening for those to the half hour people. We will be back again after station identifications for the full hour show. We'll be back.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
In case you're just joining us right now, this is the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Network. That's the National Campus and Community Radio Associations across BC and across Canada. And of course, you're tuned in to the Community Living Show, dealing with issues and special needs people throughout British Columbia and around the world. For that matter, we don't normally do stuff that is basically Vancouver issues, so just to keep that in mind. And of course, we're doing the Autism Live, so if you want to check them out, that's www.autism-live.com, and you can also sign in for a free newsletter. As well, you can also go to another website, centerforautism.com. That's the broadcast. They do Autism Live, headquartered in Woodland Hills, California. But they also do autism issues around the globe. We're hoping to get Shannon, that's the host of the show, hopefully get onto the show and maybe get some advice for our Canadian people here. Anyways, we will, and of course, mostly in autism in general. Anyways, we're coming back with the Ask Dr. Doreen. And of course, you can check them out again on autismlive.com. And this was recorded yesterday, November 2nd.
There's strategies that will help him attend and be able to comprehend better. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do. Comprehension, when it's hard, is always based on some other thing. Is he distractible? Is he, like, there's all these other things. So, you know, it's more of an assessment. It's not, you cannot pound this into correcting it. Like, what you're trying to do is you're repeatedly trying to get him to get it, to get him to understand it. No, there's something missing. There's one screw in the whole framework that's not in place. You gotta go back and find that. Like, what is the prerequisite skill that he's missing? Is he attending? Does he understand all the vocabulary? Does he understand the length of the sentences? Does he get distracted? Does he all of that, right? Does he know how to verbalize the response when you ask him a question? All those types of things. And as far as your own stuff goes, just get a handle on the worrying, because he's doing the best he can. When we get irritated with our kids, like I remember when I used to get really frustrated with my little one, my kids pretty much almost never irritate me anymore. Almost never. Like, very, very rarely do they do something that really irritates me, because I've come to, maybe it's because they're old enough that you get to a point where you realize that their struggles are their struggles. When they're little, when my third one was very, very little, and she like would throw tantrums or be really disrespectful to other people in the house or that sort of thing, and I would like have to punish her or have to take her away from the environment or do a response cost or whatever, it always was extremely disturbing to me. And I think it was disturbing because it indicated to me that I'm not being a good enough parent. If my child misbehaves, that must be mean I'm not a good enough parent.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that's what happens with our kids. The irritation is an immediate sign for us to think, I must have not been good enough. But that's not the case at all. It's not necessarily the case. You know, the child could be struggling with the content. And even if that's the case, that still doesn't mean anything, because he may have not received the content in the correct order. So just take every situation for only what it is and don't extrapolate to a lifelong disaster. It's not. It's
work
just
the problem.
Work that one single issue and don't worry about guilt. Is garbage. I always tell my kids the most ridiculous emotion we have is guilt.
Okay.
Like, it's such a waste of time. You know, honestly, it's like, it's the past. What are you going to do about it? Just feel bad? Great. You know, that does nothing. So move forward and remember for the next time to separate your own emotion. If you need to step away from it, step away from it. Do not allow think of yourself. Sometimes, you know, as parents, of course, we never... It's amazing. Years and years ago, even today, we tried a long, long time ago to give parents, to provide for our parents family counseling, marriage counseling, and so on. And parents just aren't interested. When our kids are struggling, it's almost we immediately forget everything about ourselves because it's just about the child. But the truth is, you are also going through a really tough time here. You are like feeling really horrible just about the fact that you took away a reinforcer. You did the right thing. You're supposed to take away a reinforcer so that your child is motivated.
Right.
But don't feel bad about it. You're just, the instructional method has to change. It's fine to take away a reinforcer, but then go ahead and figure out earlier what you can teach or what basic, more prerequisite skills he needs in order to comprehend. That's what you need to do. Are you using skills? Get on our skills website, because if you aren't, if you answer those questions, I guarantee you, you'll see all the holes. You'll understand what prerequisite earlier skills need to be taught.
And then can we talk just a little bit about, I had a major epiphany, which I want to come back
Please.
To, but I want to talk a little bit about this whole idea of, do we make the task fun? Because she says she tried to make it fun and that he got irritated and said, I just want to get it over as fast as possible. Or do we make the fun part come after the task is over?
Neither one. The fun comes from the achievement. So you make it easier. You don't have
okay.
to make it fun. You make it easier.
Okay.
And therefore the child succeeds, gets his reinforcer, and the whole experience becomes fun.
Okay. So stop trying to, you know, make it the...
No, work
the
is work.
Dancing.
You're not
yeah.
going to have a fantastic... This is what we're in, when we go to school, it's school.
Yeah.
We have enough reinforcers for going to school because we have breaks where we play with our friends, we get to see our friends, and even if we don't have friends, we satisfy our parents, whatever it is.
Right.
Different people have different reinforcers. But so you can't make the task itself fun. You can make it reinforcing, and the only way to make it reinforcing is to make it so that he's successful. Remember, the key to therapy is one in every three opportunities has to be successful. Don't forget that. That's the whole district.
One in every three opportunities has to be
yeah,
successful.
Yeah, so a child should never fail more than twice in three times.
Okay.
Ever.
I'm
right?
sure I've heard that before, but I'm
well,
hearing it for
original,
the first time. You know what I mean?
It's prompt on the third trial.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. I've heard it in that way.
Of course.
So never let them go three times without being successful by the third time.
The third time, not even the fourth time, the third time has to be successful. So if you have two failures, make the task easier. How are you making the task easier? You're prompting, you're going back and giving prerequisite skills, all that sort of stuff. Okay. Modeling, you know.
Okay, so here's the epiphany that I had while you were talking, is that now as we've been making this shift to core curriculum, and everybody is to some extent, that I was explaining this to somebody this morning, that the core curriculum, we were talking about people, you know, being given fact A, being given fact B, and having to arrive at, extrapolate from that and come up with fact C. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of what the core curriculum does, and it is really based in reading facts and then being able to discern.
Infer.
Infer and understand implications and things like that. Which, so it's like comprehension on steroids, because you have to think as you're doing it. And there is the potential, we could easily say, oh, that's so bad for our kids. That's going to be harder for our kids.
Which is fantastic.
I was realizing as you were talking that it's all there in skills, though, to give, and it kind of forces us to go back and teach
practice
all of those
the
things.
Stuff. Absolutely.
And when we do, all the kids are struggling with this, right? Mm-hmm. Especially kids who've been in school for a couple of years and not had to do this, and the shift is really hard. If we take the time to do those lessons and skills, our kids will be better prepared for the core curriculum, and it's a way that we can really serve them, and then they will be more prepared for the higher grades, and including college and graduate school. So I was realizing, ooh, I need to go back and do some segments on those different parts of skills that teach those things.
Definitely. You know, and for parents in general, there's a slight difference between comprehension and inferring, because comprehension is usually based on information that is right present there. So for instance, you know, the sky is blue. What color is the sky? Oh, it's blue, you know. Or so it's either visually there, so you read in comprehension, or you hear it in the information presented, and you just have to be listening to the information presented well enough to be able to respond. Inferences have nothing to do with really, or they do, but the words are not there. The exact answer is not there. You have to be able to figure it out.
Exactly.
It's kind of like, you know, we went to a restaurant and we had to wait for ages. Why did we have to wait for ages? That's an inference for you to say, well, it must have been busy, right?
Yeah.
So inferences are a completely different skill than comprehension of knowledge and information, and both are very important. And yes, our children have a hard time with inferences, but not necessarily. When they get the idea, like, you know, because this is what Evelyn always says, they're very black and white, and you have to teach them the gray. This is the gray. And it's like if a child understands the concept of potential extrapolations, you know, like it was busy, what could be the possible causes?
Yeah.
Then they can infer. They have no problem. In fact, our kids infer fantastically because they're so smart and creative and imaginative. It's just a matter of them getting what are they asking me? What do they want me to say?
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. But it is very helpful. I didn't realize that if the core curriculum is more inference based, then it's really important, and it's really good for all kids, not just our kids, to be problem solving.
Exactly.
So that's fantastic. Yeah, you should really, I really recommend skills for that, for the inferences. And I do also recommend skills for the fact that it picks up holes, like in your child's processing. You know, like even my own, I see the difference with my children in terms of their reading ability. And I think that like when you are, it really, vocabulary, for instance, is a huge, it's such a massive critical factor in things like comprehension and a lot of later skills.
Yes. Yeah, and there's so many things. So we're going to work on that. We're going to work on some segments about skills, about those specific things. I'm thinking of something I want to do, because there's a saliency lesson that would be really beneficial for both of these things. All right. My head is worrying. Okay. We're going to take a short...
Yeah, so we're going to take a short break, which is right in the middle of it. So you're tuned into the Community Living Show on ENCRE Radio Networks. And, of course, our flagship station's full-hour show, CITR 101.9 FM, and streaming online at CITR.ca. This is the Community Living Show. We'll be right back. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Join Broken Pencil Magazine for our annual fair of zine culture and independent arts, Canzine West, happening Saturday, November 5th from 1 to 7 p.m. at SFU Woodwards. The fair features over 200 exhibitors of zines, comics, and other underground print weirdness from Vancouver and beyond. Plus, our panel, How to Use Zines and Self-Publishing to Advance Your Cause, featuring activists and creators from Megaphone Magazine, the Vancouver Public Library, and more. We will also be listening to our radical readers in the chill and cozy confines of a blanket fort, featuring Adele Barclay, Carly Baker, and more. Entry is free all day long. Come discover new underground works and support DIY culture from across the West Coast.
Rocket from Russia, weekly punk rock radio show on CITR, presented to you by Stomp Records from Montreal. Every Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. on 101.9 FM.
Okay, welcome back to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks, the National Campus and Community Radio Association Network. And we're also on the Hour Show on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. And we're also online at CITR.ca. Of course, we are talking about Autism Live. Anything about questions about Ask Dr. Doreen that was happening yesterday on November 2nd. I keep saying October. It's not October. It's November. Silly me. And if you want more information on their free newsletter, go to www.autism-live.com. And for more information about their card website, it's www.centerforautism.com. And now the conclusion. We're not going to play all of it. Just to let you know that's about 54 minutes or 55 minutes, and we don't have enough time. So back to Ask Dr. Doreen.
Back to Autism Live and to Ask Dr. Doreen. I wanted to just address that the last question that we answered here, somebody wrote it and said, the person who wrote said, Dear Shannon and Dr. Doreen, thank you very much for your input on the reading comprehension. So wise and so lucky to have your advice.
That's
and
really
I
nice.
Feel the same way that we are so lucky to have someone as wise as Dr. Grampuchet with us. Okay, the next question, we had two questions about the ATEC. Somebody who wrote in said, Hi, Dr. Doreen, can you talk about ATEC scores? Somebody else said, Hi, Dr. Doreen, I had a question in regards to the ATEC. I never did it with my son when my son was first diagnosed. I did it last week, and he scored a 50. What does that mean? And what is the ATEC exactly? And thanks. I'm glad that you're asking because I don't know.
Okay. It's funny that it's coming up so, like, in two questions because it's not that. I think some insurance companies are starting to use it. So actually, the ATEC is the Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist. It was made by Steve Edelson, who you've had on the show.
Who we adore.
And as well as Bernie Rimland. They made it together many years ago. And it is exactly what it is. It's Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist. So it's meant to be administered before treatment and then periodically during treatment so that you can contrast the results and see that the child is improving.
Okay. It does sound like something insurance would like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if Steve's validated it yet. We were helping him with the validation of the ATEC, but I don't know where it is now because this is 20 years ago he made this. So from what I know, it has four sections. And the sections are speech and language is the first set. And it's a parent questionnaire, and it's like takes 15 to 20 minutes to fill out.
Okay.
So it's speech and language, then sociability, and then sensory and cognitive awareness, and then the last section is physical health issues.
Okay.
So I think the last section is filled out by a physician, the rest is filled out by a parent. And you just get 0, 1, or 2 scores based on the severity within each area, and they all just add up. And if the total score would be 180. So if you get a score of like 50, that indicates that your child's pretty high functioning and that he will have some areas of deficit, but not too many. And that's it. So it's just basically you get a score at any given time, and then you get another score again when you've improved.
Okay, so the expectation would be after doing some therapy, the number would get higher.
Higher. The higher you are, the higher the number is, the more severe you are.
I see.
The number has to go down.
So you want the number to go down.
Right. So that's why 50 is not a big deal.
I see.
50 out of 180 is not bad. So if it was more like 100 out of 180, then you'd have a lot of symptoms to deal with.
Okay. So is it too much to say that then you maybe have 50 things where you can have improvement?
Well, it's not really 50 things, because on each thing you could get a score of 2 or 3, right? So, but it is a number of things where you need help.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great. Well,
it's kind of like looking at the severity. Remember when the DSM-5 came out and
yes.
I said I really like it? Actually, most people don't, but I like the fact that they finally have a severity scale.
Yes.
Severity scales help a lot with a syndrome as wide as autism, and that's why the ATIC is also good, because it's always good to look at different things and say, what's the level of severity? You know, like you could say a child has problems with language, and that would include a child who has problems with very advanced pragmatic language, but then also children who are nonverbal.
Right.
So it's such a huge, so it's always good to say, okay, if the person with, you know, a lot of language, they just have advanced problems. That's like a level 1, maybe. But a 3 is really someone who has severe language issues, you know, so.
It's so interesting, though, because it's been 3 years now since it changed. And has it been 3 years or 4 years? It's been a while.
Yeah,
and we're just now starting to see parents key into the severity rating and know what their severity rating of their child is.
Right.
And I don't know whether it's because we just have the clinicians who are sharing it with the parents now.
Maybe.
But we're just now starting to see parents.
But even now, Shannon, I still see a lot of errors in it. Like, people will say, I'm a severity 2, and that's wrong, because you have to have 2 ratings of severity.
Okay.
So it always, a child has to be 2-3 or 1-2.
It's not just one number.
Not one number.
Okay.
So a lot of people still get the diagnostic criteria, like, just off a little bit. In fact, I see a lot of reports from psychologists even.
Yeah.
Who are not writing it correctly.
Well, we're still getting parents who are saying, my child was diagnosed with Asperger's.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not, you really can't be anymore.
No,
that is not
anymore.
An official.
You can have ASD Asperger's type.
Oh, okay.
That's how
maybe
it is.
That's okay. Maybe that's what they're meaning then. All right. I'm going to move on to another question. Good morning. Any advice on attention-seeking behavior of peers in the classroom? My 7-year-old likes to be the class clown every school year. He ends up getting into trouble with teachers and sometimes missing school. He has autism and ADHD, but does well in regular ed classrooms and things. I, of course, used to be a stand-up comedian, and I love the stories of all the stand-up comedians and how they talk about how they didn't do well in school. That Chris Rock, was lucky to get out of school with his life because the teachers wanted to do him bodily harm because he was being the class clown in class.
Right, right.
And I can imagine how difficult that is for a parent.
Absolutely.
But there are some pluses to it. I just want to say that.
Absolutely. So first of all, I didn't know you used to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I've threatened Jabiz, who is legal counsel here, does stand-up comedy, and I've said, you know, I haven't done stand-up since I was pregnant with Jem. That was the last, and it had been a while before that. But I've said that we should do some sort of a benefit, and because we have another person here that also does stand-up, we should do an evening of stand-up.
That's unbelievable.
We should do that.
Oh my gosh, now that I know, for sure.
Oh dear. Okay, what if I started? I'm sorry that you didn't know that. Yes,
I had no idea. I mean, I always knew that you were in drama background, but I didn't know you did stand-up. That's amazing.
Okay,
That's
I have
so,
a story
I'm
to tell
very,
about Jem later, but let's answer this
okay,
question
I'm very,
first.
I'm very, first of all, proud of you, because I really am amazed with people who do stand-up. Like, I think so much of that is improv, and it's so difficult to do, and, like, you know, so that explains the that explains the link, the connection you have with Jabiz and also with my son.
Yes,
you all are.
Which is a very. Is he doing? Is your son doing that now? He needs
he won't.
To.
I don't know if he will. He's very shy. I don't. You know that's.
But
that's,
he is a stand-up comedian.
He's
at heart.
A comedian.
I can see
he's
that.
He's a comedian, but he's a comedy writer.
Yes.
You know, so he likes to write comedy. So, but anyway. Going back to this, this is a very difficult situation, and that's so I have several questions and just thoughts about this. So one thing is your son able to make jokes where people are laughing at with him, or are they laughing at him? Let's make that differentiation first, because if they're laughing with him, I'm not so worried as if they're laughing at him. In other words, if he's making jokes and the joke is not really funny and people are just laughing because a kid tried to make a joke that failed, then that's a whole different kind of sort of very subtle social bullying issue, which we should talk about. But if he's telling jokes and the jokes are working, actually, then that's a different problem. And here's what that problem is. Let's talk about that problem. That problem is that the reinforcement he gets from making his peers laugh is much higher than anything else, than getting the approval of the teachers. So there's a certain level of reinforcement attached to getting approval of teachers, and there's a certain amount of reinforcement attached to making peers laugh. This one, making peers laugh, is by far overriding the teacher appreciation or the teacher approval. He couldn't care less. As long as he gets the laughs, the teachers can be mad at him. So what you have to do is you kind of have to reverse it. And really the only way, it's tough, but the only way you can reverse it is essentially make the appreciation for other people's, like make the other people's laughter reduce, which means, you know, the teacher would have to tell everyone, you guys, when someone makes a joke, it's not okay for if I see other people laughing, you're going to get in trouble too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then more people will not, less people will laugh. Therefore, your son will get less reinforcement from it. And you need to attach some sort of powerful reinforcer to the teacher's approval. So the teacher every day, for instance, could rate your son's behavior from 0 to 10. And every day when he comes home, if he got higher than a 6 or whatever, he could get a special, like a money from you, whatever it is. So that's how you do it. But it is very hard because, as I said, that social reinforcer, you know, like kids who are class clowns, but they also are able to, like Sonny is a class clown. My son was a class clown, and he yet cared so much about the teachers that somehow he would always get them involved too. Mm-hmm. So he had this kind of thing going where he knew I better not mess with the teacher too much.
Right.
And therefore, like, he's friends with a lot of his teachers.
Yeah.
But kids who are a class clown to the extent that the teacher is offended and upset by it, they just need to cut it out. And the only way they're going to cut it out is if they don't get enough reinforcement from doing it, but they get more reinforcement for the opposite.
Yeah.
That's like anything else in ABA. This is DRO, DRA, differential reinforcement of alternative behavior.
All right, so we're going to leave it there. You can sign up for Autism Live's free newsletter at www.autismlive.com and join the discussion as well. And you can also go to centerforautism.com. That's their card system headquartered in Woodland Hills, California. And, of course, they serve offices throughout the United States and around the globe. That is it for our community living show. Please tune in for next week for more exciting, I would say maybe special guests that might be happening, but you just never know what might happen for our next week's show. So stick around for that for next week. And of course, we are on email, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you if you like what you hear, any advice on different shows you want to hear or anything you want to have anything on disabilities in general, please email us. We love to hear from you. Of course, we would like to thank Michael Rubin, who was in the earlier today. So thank you very much, Michael. So That's it for our show. Please stay tuned for other shows that are on the NCRE Radio Networks. And please join us again every week, wherever you can. And we will be back again next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.